Hi, Varuna. How are you doing?
Hi Sanjay, it's nice talking to you.
Nice talking to you too, and I'm so glad that we are finally doing this episode after months of planning, I guess.
True, true, true. It's been a while.
So, Varuna, you've been a graphic designer
Yes.
and you turned to an illustrator.
Yes.
And after that, for a short while, you were an entrepreneur.
Yes, I was.
And then you become a mentor,
Yeah.
and then you become a UX designer in healthcare,
Yes.
leading a team, hiring designers,
Yes.
whatnot.
Yes.
Quite a journey you've had.
Yeah.
So walk me through the journey. And I see a lot of decisions that you've taken in your journey, right? So from graphic designer to an entrepreneur,
True.
from an entrepreneur, pro mentor, and then you become a UX designer.
True,
So a lot
true.
of things, a lot of transitions is what I see.
Thank you for having me here. It's a pleasure to be here. Well, to start with, I was married to design really young, right? I passed out in 2011, and this was the time when print was big and we learned a lot of print. And just as I passed out, we figured out that print was waning out and it was time for the new age of web and graphics to come in, right? So although I had passed out as a print designer, I moved into website design quite quickly, right? Now, within that began my whole transitional method, right? Because I feel like in some ways I'm kind of commitment phobic. I cannot commit to one area or subsection of design. I was interested in the entire spectrum. So I moved from graphic design to being a web designer and a graphic designer on web at that. We didn't have a word for UX back then, right? And this is when I worked in a company for a couple of years, post which I started being independent, branching out on my own. I started doing a lot of illustrative and basic design consulting, right, for a while. And it was only a matter of time that my clients themselves wanted to pull me in to start my own design company and in the field of UX, especially because this was in 2016 when UX, we were beginning to see the first remnants of the tidal wave that is now UX design, right? And that's formed now. So this was the beginning of that. And we put dipped our hands into the ocean of UX. And I was working with a bunch of really interesting companies. We did a lot of end-to-end designs. We did game design and all of that. At some point, I thought that I was also hitting a glass ceiling because I wasn't able to conceive as to what the next step is for me at that point, which is why I moved to Italy, did my education there. And once I came back, teaching had taken my heart, and I was teaching at a French university called Strat. And that actually helped me A, learn and get more solid in my design thinking and my design processes. It's only after that that I started again dipping myself into UX design and deep diving into that process. And I moved into EdTech, and then we moved into also working with NGOs and all of that impact-driven initiatives. That process led me to being in healthcare with Dr. Reddy's.
Wow, quite the journey. And I like something that you said here, said getting solid by teaching. That's something that I have also seen in my journey. And I think there's another commonality here is Italy. I did my
Yeah.
master's from Italy
Yes.
So we've both been there. There's a way of teaching, their way of mentoring, right? And we've
Correct.
also seen how they, I mean, how the food is,
Absolutely.
right?
What do you like best about Italian design?
Italian design, I think it's there in everything. And it is not completely focused on just functional stuff, right? Everything looks very nice.
True.
At the same time, it also functions.
Yeah.
So that's really nice. I mean, even the you go to a coffee shop. I
Yeah.
mean, they call it bar there.
Yeah.
So you go to a cafe. I mean, you ask for a cafe, right? And then even the smallest things are nicely done,
Correct,
right? There.
correct.
So
The attention to detail.
yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. So I was in Turin. The symbol was Toro.
Oh,
Yeah, Toro.
nice.
And when I was visiting, like I would, whenever I used to take a walk on just on the lamp posts, you'd see really nice sculptures,
Nice. Yeah.
right? On the streets. Yeah, so it
Yes.
was so beautiful to look at all of those. And then you have these piazzas and
Correct.
city centers,
Correct, correct.
and they have some sort of a sculpture, sometimes a little abstract, sometimes a little. You'd find it okay. Ye toh bahut bar dikha hai, you
Correct.
know.
Yeah.
But then at every corner there'd be something that you can look at.
Correct.
So that was really nice. Every walk that I would take would be something unique that I would
Absolutely.
come across. So that was
Yeah.
really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. In general, I mean, of course, I'm a foodie, so yeah, I miss that.
Yeah. I mean, for me, what's interesting is the whole concept around design, food, everything is so cohesive because they're all about the essence of things. So your food is broken down to its key essential flavors and key essential ingredients. And the same with design, right? Their leather, feels like has different textures. They try to bring in the essence and keep that as the central focus of your design. And I find that kind of idea of minimalism is not the German way, where you kind of exclude all emotions, but you also have that emotional grounding and centering with that, right? But at the same time, you are trimming any extra, you're just making that the emphasis of your design.
That's beautiful, beautiful if put. Although I think this is going to divide the crowd when you said that you're removing emotions from German design.
Well, I like German design. It has its own purposes. Everything has its own purposes.
Yes, absolutely,
Yeah.
absolutely. So now when you are at Dr. Reddy's as a UX designer, it's been a while that you've been there. You've been leading a team of
Correct.
designers, right?
Yeah.
And you've been hiring also. So there are a lot of things to talk about here,
Correct.
but I want to understand your role first as a UX designer. What do you do at work? What is your typical day like?
Well, for the most part, I was leading a team that runs initiatives that are to do with end-to-end disease management for the most part of my career with Dr. Reddy's. Apart from that, I worked on their OPD insurance platform, which is in the market now. It's called Swas Wellness. And currently, I have moved into a role that has to do more with vision and strategy around these products. I think it was a strategic move because what I figured out is, having a production pipeline without a vision or a strategy can make you ha an hamster on a wheel. But having a vision and strategy without production output can also, be like a headless ghost. So you're not going to get the benefit of both of these. So to understand both sides of the spectrum, I've had a pretty good movement within the company itself.
Nice. Vision and strategy sounds super exciting because that's something that I also like doing.
Yes.
Although I think I'm still a long way to
I think you have the right ingredients for it.
learn.
I've had some very intense, interesting brainstorming
No, but that's something that's really inspiring also to at the same time, you enjoy the work because
Correct.
you're thinking about the future of a product or a company,
Correct.
and it also boils down to how much you can take,
Correct.
right, and
Yeah.
understand, and
Correct.
then let's say forecast
True.
for the near future and the extended future also.
True,
Right?
true, true.
So I think that's something very close to what I love doing with clients. So I'm sure you'd be enjoying your work at Dr. Reddy's?
Yes.
All right. So now talking about UX, right? So it's been there for a while. Now everybody wants to become a UX designer. They have certificate courses, programs, and whatnot, right? Every single person thinks that एक यूएक्स का कोर्स कर लेता हूँ, ठीक है, एंड आई विल बिकम अ यूएक्स डिजाइनर. सो 6 months, 3 months, 4 months, बूट कैंप्स, वॉट नॉट,
करेक्ट.
बट इट डजेंट टीच यू एवरीथिंग.
नो,
इट
या
डजेंट मेक यू अ यूएक्स डिजाइनर.
नो,
सो व्हेन यू आर डीलिंग विथ दिस सिनेरियो, राइट, एंड समहाउ द इम्पोर्टेंस ऑफ दैट फील्ड sort of dilutes when you see that every other person is now claiming to be a UX designer.
true.
So, what do you think the importance of UX is given your experience?
True. Okay, so what has happened here is we've moved into a movement which is what I could call the democratization of design, right? So whereas earlier a lot of us back in the day, we had to go through design training. We had to train in the art, craft, and skill of learning and executing design, right? And today's day and age, now for better or for worse, people from all fields can do that. And in much lesser time, etc. Right? So it is what it is. It has kind of opened up opportunities for people from other walks to get into design and enjoy and be good at it, right? Because sometimes the best designers I've met have been engineers, have been, I mean, look at you, you were a transportation designer, right? So people from different walks of life can kind of embrace UX design, and that's the beauty of it, right? Now, often when there is so much availability of designers, good designers get extremely rare. So although you have people at every nookad who is a UX designer, I bet you the amount of good UX designers are much lesser
That's
now
true. That's
than they
so
were
true.
back in the day,
So
right?
true. Yeah, so
Yeah.
true.
And I think UX, the beautiful thing about UX is UX has helped us operationalize design to be a core function. Right? Earlier designers were aesthetics. Earlier designers, it was okay to have one, but you could live without one, right? But today's day and age, the market sensitivity has grown to a point where a designer is a part of the core team that helps us make impact as well as create more like sustainable work within the designer community, right? So there is good and bad in both.
Yeah, I
But
completely get
I
that.
can tell you for sure, even if you take a 1 year long course, it will not teach you everything. Even if you have been 10 years in it, it's not going to teach you everything, right? It is one of those things, the more you learn, the more you realize how little you know, right? It is ever expanding, and that is the nature of it, and that is its best quality.
Yeah, absolutely. I really like that idea.
And you know the funny thing,
Uh-huh.
even if you have 10 years experience, you can learn a hell of a lot from somebody who's only done design for or UX design for 6 months. You know, because it's all a mindset thing. Like somebody who has done it for 6 months to a year doesn't have the baggage specialization comes with. Experts come with a certain kind of baggage, right? And that is something that I think creates a very open sharing community within the design within the design spectrum.
Right. So that's good for people who are actually getting into design, like UX design, who've been here for what let's say 6 months to 1 year,
True.
no
Yeah.
baggage.
Yeah.
And the 10 years guy who
Yeah.
has like spent quite some time in the field
True.
has some sort of a baggage and
True.
biases maybe could
Yes.
be, right?
Yes. Yes.
Because they've worked on multiple projects
True.
over the time.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think that's a very good way to look at things. Also, when I mean, here I think that when it comes to the experienced folks, like you know, you're leading a team, for example. I'm sure there'll be times where, these juniors would come to you and say, okay, they might bring you the out-of-the-box idea, right? But the feasibility of it, the viability of it,
True.
and if it is something that you can execute at scale, that experience you would definitely bring to the table. Only an experienced guy, right?
True.
So, when it comes to that, for people to understand, how do you measure that? Let's say, how do you measure design?
I mean, that's the interesting question, right? And that's what vision and strategy actually answers. Because although it sounds, when I say vision and strategy, it sounds like a very woo-woo thing, it's very data-driven, okay? And it's data-driven from the point of view of voice of customers, voice of stakeholders, data analytics, information architecture, the heuristics, right? All these factors are considered. But I think another thing that makes UX an important cornerstone in the evolution of design is exactly what you said. It adds a certain amount of measurability to new ideas. So there are different, depending on the product or the idea that you're trying to validate, there are different methods and frameworks and matrices that you could use to potentially say ki a certain idea is higher on either desirability or feasibility or viability. Ideally, you want it to be equally faring on all three. I mean, that's the best, right? But some of the better ideas that are for future focused, right, are often asymmetric within this. So a key aspect of being a user experience designer is to be able to bring that measurability to your learnings. And it is basis that measurability that we are supposed to enable business teams to make certain decisions and plan the future of the product and the company and figure the best way to make business and revenue impact even.
Right. That's really important. And a lot of people, I think, don't even understand the fact that design can have this much impact or can create this much impact on a business. I think that is slowly changing now for good, and I'm really happy to see that. But for the longest of times, even now, I see a lot of startups or new companies coming up where design is still not the first thing that they think about. I mean,
Absolutely.
imagine had Airbnb thought about this,
Absolutely.
we wouldn't have a design founder in one of the top companies.
Correct. True.
So yeah, I completely agree to that, and I mean, I cannot agree more. I think that will be a better statement here
True.
to make. So when we are looking at these designers, right, who are making their way into UX or been in UX for a couple of years or so. So right now we just discussed the importance of UX, right?
True.
So what becomes their responsibility right now when it's evolving at a pace that we cannot even imagine what will happen in the next months? So what is the responsibility of these designers?
I mean, there are certain hard and soft aspects of this responsibility, right? Let me cover the soft aspects first. So one of the key things I feel, and I would say the soft aspects are the most underrated in the design job description, right? So I would say a key, really key aspect to being a good UX designer is collaborating and cross-functional working within the team, right? Because the whole point of a UX designer is to simplify thoughts or to create a seamless process to integrate different functions, core functions within a certain environment. And I feel like that responsibility is growing by the day. And it lies on our shoulders, right? And this includes facilitation for alignment, for collaboration, idea and concept generation. So whatever it takes for you to get buy-in on your ideas and to get your stakeholders involved in the process early on. right? So they feel like you're talking from the same side of the table rather than you give them designs and then they accept it or deny it, right? In this case, the dynamic is a little different and they have a vested interest in seeing you grow and you have a vested interest in moving the product or the key function forward, right? So I feel like design is not just design anymore. It is also this aspect of design has to do more with teamwork and facilitating and guiding and, you know, moderating this kind of different teamwork, right? Now, apart from this, I feel like basis that, right, we also have a responsibility to listen. And when I say listen, I mean not just within the team, but also outside the team, right? We're talking about different target segments. We're talking about different geographical areas. Listen to different ethnographies. Listen to different people, right? And derive insights from them, which will help you design the vision and strategy aligned with that. Then there is a responsibility of gatekeeping that point of view, right? Where you are ruthless with eliminating anything that dilutes that, right? I think the market in the last area is still a little sensitive, and we still need to look at what better ways to deal with that. But I can say the first two areas are certainly what UX is shaping into.
Absolutely. I think I also struggled with this when you said that gatekeeping part of it. The approach when I initially started out was for me, I would make some design and I think that, okay, this is good. For me, it answers the brief.
Correct.
And I take it to my client, and client would say, nahin yaar, kuch aur karte hain.
Correct.
So, though I did involve the client in different stages, but then client would still come up with this idea saying, हाँ इतना ठीक है, इसके बाद क्या कर रहे हैं हम लोग.
True.
Where the client feels it's not the final one,
Correct.
where I feel that, okay, this is the final one. So I think there was this lack of, let's say, missing elements here, whatever we talked about, right? Listening. Maybe listening wasn't done from all the areas that I needed to listen to, right? Didn't touch upon that. So there's a very important thing that you've mentioned, and I'm reminded of what the mistakes that I've done.
True. And by the way, what happened to you is a universal experience. Every single designer I vouch for has felt this, right? I think now, thankfully, we are moving to a space where we can say, okay, we've done research, and these are the data points based off of which we would suggest so and so. But then, if the client wants something else, there is very little as designers we can do to persuade that. You know, I mean, if I may illustrate with an example, right? So I was working with a NGO that used to teach or do educational programs in low resource environments. So where internet is less, electricity isn't there, or they don't have money for gadgets and stuff like that, right? And I had to design their whole website. And just imagine this, I'm 8 years into it. I'm taking pride because I've made the best in my experience back then. I thought were the best looking, clean, minimal, you know, kind of design language. And suddenly I had to move into a zone where I was, for the lack of a better word, using gaudy colors and, you know, loud, you know, strong typography. And what I realized there is at some point you are just a facilitator, right? So my job for that demographic was to facilitate what they wanted. And if you're talking about the demographic was, let's say, kids in Dharavi and small villages in Haryana, UP and Rajasthan, that is the design aesthetics they are used to. It
Absolutely.
doesn't mean that you can't do better. It just means that that is the right piece of the puzzle in that game, right? So it's a tricky one. It's a tricky one.
I think it takes a certain level of maturity to also understand that, because मतलब डिजाइन जब सोचते हैं तो सब कुछ अच्छी ही लगनी चाहिए, राइट? सो देर इज सम लेवल ऑफ मेच्योरिटी टू बी टेकन इनटू कंसिडरेशन व्हेन वी आर टॉकिंग अबाउट दैट.
True.
कूल, ऑल राइट. वी हैव बीन टॉकिंग अबाउट यूएक्स नाउ, इम्पोर्टेंस एंड व्हाट दी डिजाइनर्स यू नो देयर रेस्पॉन्सिबिलिटी इज. सो व्हेन वी टॉक अबाउट हेल्थ केयर फॉर एग्जाम्पल, लाइक यू आर इन डॉक्टर रेड्डीज, हेल्थ केयर में यूएक्स और लेट्स से डिजाइन फॉर दैट मैटर, यू गो टू लेट्स से हॉस्पिटल, द डिजाइन एलिमेंट्स वुड बी वॉट आई वुड सी विजुअली, द वे फाइंडिंग थिंग्स, द विजुअल्स, द लेट्स से म्यूरल्स ऑल्सो ऑन द वॉल्स एंड सम ग्राफिक्स, सम ब्रोशर्स और बुकलेट्स वट एवर दे हैव, राइट? सो यूएक्स इज बियॉन्ड दैट. इट इज नॉट जस्ट विजुअल, राइट? विजुअल इज जस्ट वन आउटकम ऑफ दैट यूएक्स प्रोसेस. सो वॉट is the importance, the role of UX design in healthcare?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question, right? I think the new age, we as designers have evolved out of that visual shell, right? I mean, let's talk about healthcare as such, right? So currently what we are, we could call healthcare as a 1.0 version, right? Where I would consider this phase as being almost pre-Stone Age. We have a lot of archaic systems and outdated processes that hasn't changed in ever. Now, COVID has brought in a certain amount of digitalization and has kind of made that accessibility a little bit easier. But the key problems of what's happening behind the scenes in terms of processes and systems are still the same, right? So it is unfortunately currently it's devoid of emotion, it's devoid of any kind of positivity, right? So I believe the first responsibility of a designer in healthcare is what we could say as putting the care back into the healthcare, right? Because right now it's a dry field, right? So our role has moved from just being visual translators to people who are able to strategize, create services and processes, right, to optimize these healthcare functions. I think that would be the one core thing that I could point out.
So, is it right to say that designers who get into healthcare, they should be able to see beyond what they can usually see or what others can usually see?
True, you could say that. I think the future of how this, we are at the changing tide, right? So we are at a place where we are able to trailblaze this process and it can turn into whatever we want. But I would say the key thing with healthcare or EVs or any of these future-focused initiatives that actually have impact is to solve the problem over making good design, right? So that does involve an element of seeing or insinuating what's not so obvious or bringing the unconscious to the consciousness, right? So there is an element of that, but it wouldn't be all of it.
Interesting. So what would a designer do in healthcare? Like, what would be the role? Let's say now a graphic designer, he can design logos. The graphic designer can also do packaging. They can do campaigns, visual campaigns. They can do social media things as well.
Correct.
So what would a UX designer do in healthcare? So where would they find themselves?
Correct. So, I think there are a few very common gaps that if I were to take like a overview, right? Like a 50,000 point overview. There are like a few basic gaps that I see in the current healthcare ecosystem, right? So one is the empathetic gap. Now, this is basically the responsibility here for the designers is to articulate, understand, and cater to the unmet needs of both the healthcare practitioner and the patients, right? It is about bringing the voice of the customer on the table. And till date, no matter how future focused or forward thinking our initiatives are, what I find is that voice of the customer is missing. So one, I could see that as a gaping loophole to fill. The next thing is a systemic gap. Now, this is where we optimize process excellence for both efficiency and effectiveness. Now, why should we look at these things? This is especially very interesting for people who are into the logical design thinking processes, right? So this helps us build a case for, you know, shorter turnaround times, better unit economics, you know, measuring effort cost ratio, also bridging the internal gaps within the collaboration of the core systems. So that's the second. And then there is a service gap. So the third part is the treatment gap, right? So we've moved into a phase where treatment options do not just lie within the four walls of the healthcare ecosystem, right? We have to move beyond these four walls. Right. Now, this often includes end-to-end disease management, treatment management systems for, let's say, people who have cancer, and also chronic condition management for people who have psoriasis or PCOS, PCOD, diabetes, right? I mean, unfortunately, we live in a country where 2 out of every 5 people have a chronic disease.
Yeah.
So something like this kind of puts the power back into the hands, or puts the responsibility of good health back in the pockets of our users. So that's a very empowering place to be in. Now, one thing we have learned is that these problems cannot be solved only by an app or only by intervention, right?
Yeah.
There is a huge behavioral aspect to it. And this is where comes the service gap. Right. So the service gap is not just to build good apps, but to facilitate treatment options within those apps and taking a 360 degree point of view to what a cohesive and holistic treatment is to solve the problem.
Can you give us an example of that behavioral aspect of it? How can the service, you know, do that?
Okay, so I can give you, because I've worked in the end-to-end disease management sector, right?
Right.
So, for example, one of the key things we have to solve for is adherence of medication, compliance of treatment plans. So, just imagine this. We have a diabetes patient. They don't want to take their daily medication.
Right.
And they don't want to walk 5,000 steps or, you know, plan a diet that does not have their jalebis and kaju barfis in it, right?
Yeah.
And it's our job to make them do that.
Right.
So we kind of basically design rituals for them to build habits that are healthy. So we kind of stack habits on top of each other. So a good example of that is, hey, by the way, it's 1 o'clock. It's time for you to eat. And you get a notification on your app saying, hey, have you eaten just yet? And if they say yes, you can then stack the habit of having your medication right after.
Right.
So it doesn't feel cumbersome to them, but at the same time, they're adhering to their treatment plan.
Right.
So firstly, initiating incentives like that, as well as creating these ecosystems, is a service gap that is worth solving for designers at this stage. And then obviously there is the experience gap. Now, there are areas where the healthcare professional relationship with the patient is, let's say, very dry, right? And between the healthcare professionals also, they are unaware of how to solve comorbid cases. And when I say comorbidities, I mean, a good example is hypertension and diabetes, person with more than one chronic condition. And these cases are in nature quite difficult to resolve. So
right.
If you're talking about, let's say rheumatoid arthritis
Mm.
or diabetes. People's health condition can deteriorate in a span of a day to a couple of weeks.
Wow.
And it's kind of difficult because, like, you might do something to solve one portion of it and it might flare up issues on the other aspects of a
Yeah.
person's health. So basically, communication of this treatment plan becomes very important. Combining products offerings, product offerings with service offerings becomes a very core component to this because you have to monitor them almost very minutely, very delicately, at for the lack of a better term. But at the same time, we have to define what business ROIs should we meet, because we can't have one doctor to each patient, right? We have to also look at the business insights and how that is driving this whole plan. And in the long term, we need to create adoption, we need to create driving, we need to drive for compliance, and we need to create, again, I would use the word a holistic healthcare system that is at this point very one-sided. I could see these as being the key gaps.
Interesting, interesting. So also the processes and the cost effectiveness of the whole system. And there's also this thing about personalization. What do you think about that? Personalization in healthcare, and what is your take on that?
I mean, it is a difficult problem to solve because at this point, you are proverbially looking at two ends of the spectrum and trying to tie them in. So this is the eternal dharam sankat with everything you're going to try to solve. So personalization is what creates adoption and drives adherence, right? While on the other hand, you have standardization, which drives ROI and process-driven solutions. Now, I mean, we are Indians. We would rather just pick our phones and speak to someone than go through an entire page of FAQs to find out one answer. So I think here it's a very delicate balance of how much to do what. As in, how much of the process can be standardized without compromising user experience and customer experience? At the same time, how much of personalization can we add, because it's not a one size fits all. That's what we've gotten wrong so far in the healthcare field, right? Everyone gets a crocin. Like, the crocin for you is not, tailored to your need. And now there is a need for that kind of personalization because, for example, let's say I have diabetes, I have type A diabetes, while somebody else has type B diabetes. And my aggravators are different, my barriers are different. So, keeping all this in mind, I need to come up with the new age is about communicating and creating these personalized solutions. So, that again pushes the envelope on this dichotomy. But in the end, I think this is a little bit of a false dichotomy. I think this entire thing has to be one solution rather than us looking at it as either this or that. I think that perspective clearly has to change.
Interesting. As you were saying, that crocin for me and crocin for you, crocin for everybody. It's not, when you say it's not personalized. So at the end of the day, the doctor writes it. So are we also assuming the designers to be some way involved in that process as well?
Oh, designers have to work with doctors in healthcare. There is no doubt about it. There's no way getting around it. I think again, there are limitations that the real world does bring, and you cannot make different types of crocin. I can acknowledge that. But you could say that crocin for you would do XYZ, but for person B could do ABC instead. So you can use it more effectively in ways that are right for you. So I feel like that could be a slight 1 mm shift that can, start to make a little bit of a difference.
Interesting. So it's not designers versus engineers here, it's designers versus doctors
Again, we
here.
have to talk like we are on the same side of the table. Yeah, It is sometimes because I think the way the field of, I mean, of course, due respect to my doctor counterparts, they have been in this for a while. They have had to go really deep to the underworlds to gain the knowledge they have. But sometimes both the fields, like again, have different perspectives. So the key skill there for a leader within this is to be able to complement each other's weaknesses and kind of exaggerate each other's strengths. So can the two teams work in a way where we don't find each other as being either footloose or restrictive, but rather as a new way of finding inspiration? So that's true, because I mean, left to our devices, I think most designers, we are very fancy and very flighty, right? So the doctors do have a fundamental responsibility and advantage in grounding us.
Absolutely. Interesting take on the, let's say, gaps in healthcare for designers. To fill, to study, to know about, to research about, right? Or to be relevant, let's say, because this is something that you've picked up out of your experience. So now that we're talking about, let's say, 5 to 6 gaps that you've mentioned, there was empathetic service, there was treatment, and also experience and service, right? So when we're talking about all of these, now the government in the healthcare, they do launch certain schemes, right? Let's say ABHA for that matter. So they do launch those schemes to somewhere maybe fill those gaps or try to solve a problem, right? So how is that working?
That's a great question, actually. I mean, let me take a step back, right? The gaps that we are trying to fill on a mass scale, like a government initiative, is very different from what, let's say, I would do at Dr. Reddy's for profit. So we have the resources, we have what it takes to make things happen. And I would think that government doing these things is a little more challenging because first you're looking at an adoption of up to 2 billion people, right? I mean, at tops, but at least you want to hit at 1 billion. So there is that. But you're also looking at the key there, and I think I've emphasized this before, but I'm going to touch on it again, is the key here is to solve the problem. It isn't about making the best app. So, I mean, let's talk about ABHA, right? Now, the point of ABHA is that you have a unique ID that has all your health records under that unique ID. You have your information on the insurance, you have any sicknesses, previous reports, any chronic conditions, all of it stated within your unique ID, which is a great scheme. And we are kind of, it's out there. But it's not mandatory just yet. It's and it will be in a couple of years. But let me ask you this: do you know how to make your Abha
Good question.
ID?
Yeah, no.
Yeah, exactly. And that doesn't even surprise me. And let's say even after this, if you were to go to the government website and do it, you would be so overwhelmed. Because I did not create my Abha ID. I was like, I cannot look at this. So there is obviously like an element of that. But now, as of now, there are third-party websites and third-party apps that allow you to create these Abha IDs within like a couple of clicks, right? And not just create them, but also link them to key apps and all of that. So all your records are in one place, okay? But we don't know about these. So the education around the area is a little muddy. You know, the baseline is there, but how to use it is still unclear. Now the other issue that comes with ABHA. Now ABHA is trying to make healthcare affordable as well. Apart from it being a unique ID, what happens is with your Abha ID, you could go to certain hospitals and get certain treatments, like let's say diagnosis and etc., at very substantial rates, subsidized rates. Now, what happens is, this is the funny part, and this is where it gets tricky. Each hospital has a different plan with the ABHA. Okay, so hypothetically, if I go to hospital A, they might have a maternity plan with the ABHA. While if I go to hospital B, they might have a different plan. Okay, and the funny thing is, there isn't a single website or any awareness-driven collateral where I can check which hospital offers which plans. Now, let's take that one step ahead. And let's say if I was pregnant, or let's say if I had rheumatoid arthritis, or again, diabetes, I will go to A and say, okay, why don't you do XYZ tests for me? Run these tests so that I can take these reports and go to my doctor and come back for consultation. Now, what happens is, often the ABHA is not compensating our doctors enough, because it's subsidized. So what happens is, most often you will not get the closest appointment. You will get the appointment. It is in the interest, business interest of the doctors to cater to their private clients before they give you an appointment. So I might get an appointment 2 weeks from now or 3 weeks from now. Right? Now think about it. What is the validity of these test results 2 weeks or 3 weeks from now, in the case of maternity or arthritis or diabetes? You understand, right? So, I mean, it is there. We are moving in the right direction, but I do believe we have miles to go before we sleep, and we can do way better than what we are doing currently. Apart from this, COVID kind of opened our eyes to one thing, is that we don't have enough healthcare practitioners. I mean, we do as well. So we have almost every second person who's a doctor. But let's say in the case of a pandemic, we did not have enough healthcare professionals to cater to the sheer number, per capita number of people. This has a deeper underlying problem that is not out there in the open. So one of the things is key. A good question there is, what are the people in the rural areas doing? Right? I mean, in cities, we were finding it so hard that medical interns were doing doctor duties. What is happening in the villages or tier two, tier three cities? What's going on there? And how much healthcare facilities is accessible to the lowest earning members of these tier two, tier three states? So there is obviously that question. But the white elephant in the room here is, ki nowadays, MBBS, back in the day, in your parents' time and all of that, we had this nukkad ka doctor who was a GP. You have your headache to your stomach issues, you go to him and he will solve your problems. Now we are in an era of super specialization. So everyone wants to be a dermatologist, a nephrologist, orthodontist, etc. But what this does is, A, it increases the cost of healthcare. So let's say a GP charges 200 rupees. It's easy for the kind of investment in learning and education that doctors have done for somebody who's super specialized to charge 500 for the same services. That's one of the issues. It drives up the cost. Second thing is, a lot of things, like if I have a cold, I don't need an ENT specialist. I can go to an average doctor, he can check my congestion and they can do it. And this kind of makes the whole distribution of labor a little lopsided. So this creates again this crowding in one area when it's not required, and a devaluation of a certain area that is actually quite valuable. Now, this happens apart from this, right? Let's say midwives, let's talk about maternity and the maternity hospitals. It takes, let's say, a year or 2 years to train a midwife, where it takes at least 4 years for somebody to be a qualified obstetrician. And it is much cheaper, much better to have a midwife cater to the, and midwives can do quite a bit of the obstetrician's job, especially the deliveries. So there is a need for obstetricians. I'm not saying they're redundant. Specializations has their place. But unfortunately, nowadays, it's given undue space. And I feel like this is that monster that's driving up costs, that's reducing availability. Because it's I know how difficult it is to get an appointment with my nephrologist or a cardiologist or any of that. So I feel like this, outside of the whole UX spectrum, these are a couple of things on a national scale, on a mass scale, for all of us to solve.
Interesting. Well, I didn't think about it that way till now, till you mentioned, of course, because you've been a part of it and you've experienced, and you, these are all your observations that you're sharing now. It's a very good different perspective. Interesting. So when we're talking about all of these gaps, things that we as designers can play a small role in this whole domain, right? So again, like you said, not taking back anything from the doctors who work very hard to do what they do. So what is the future from here when we look at the future of healthcare? What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I think the key problems for us as designers to solve certainly involves accessibility to good healthcare and affordability to good healthcare. What I mean by that is, are your villagers getting the treatment that they deserve, at least for immediate purposes? Is it affordable on a minimum wage salary? It might not be the same kind of treatment that you get at Apollo or AIG or any of that, right? But they have a right to health. They have, it's not a luxury.
Right.
We need to stop that thinking, and we need to bring it into, you know, we need to make sure healthcare is accessible to more people and is effectively affordable to more people, right? I think these are key areas that I believe the future needs to solve for us to move in the right direction. Now, obviously, apart from this, we are looking at better technologies. And I think Google and Microsoft are doing some work in this. So I think Google is now working with retinopathy in smaller villages, where the AI can scan your pupils and can tell you if you have retinopathy or not. And retinopathy is a deteriorating condition as a part of diabetes, but it's not easily detectable. And again, with the same thing, right? Because to detect retinopathy, you need to have a specialist looking at it. Yeah. But can machines do that job?
Right.
At least enough for the patient to realize that either I have a serious condition or a not so serious condition. And if I have a serious condition, I need to seek better healthcare.
Right.
Right? So technologies can solve some of these issues. But I feel like we need to, as a culture, as a human race, move into a more value-driven healthcare system that incentivizes good health. So, for example, instead of charging our users, right, and this is a conversation that has been on for a while, and I'm sure that people at this point are kind of figuring it out, but how can I, as a user, pay to solve my health concerns rather than pay for every healthcare intervention? So unfortunately, the sad truth is, if I go, and this is my own personal anecdotal experience, when I go to a hospital, I spend at least 80% of my money on things that I didn't have to, because they want you to do four other tests to decipher a certain thing. So how can we make this process more effective? So even for the doctors and healthcare institutions, creating better health outcomes is incentivized. rather than, oh, we just spent 2 hours taking your, or let's say 15 minutes taking your X-ray, and hence you owe us X amount. Now, as a future within the healthcare, now these are design things to solve. I think as a future of healthcare, we can look at, let's say, preventing healthcare now becoming the center stage. So, for example, do you have insurance? Do you? Have you ever used it?
No.
And I pray you never have to, because the only point the insurance kicks in and is valid is when you're on the surgical table. But now this is something that we've been working with Dr. Reddy's, with the OPD insurance, where we try to make, let's say, diagnostics and doctor consultations and medication buying a part of our health insurance
Insurance.
offering, right? So that we are incentivizing primary health interventions at a preventive stage. So often you don't have to wait for things to go bad. So I think the next step is also an awareness and education in what is a healthy lifestyle, and creating like good ecosystems for people to uphold that healthy lifestyle, right? Because in today's day and age, we as a urban population are one sickness away to being in a poverty line. And as a country, as a race, we can't afford more sick people. Right, we cannot afford it anymore. So I think that is another problem to solve in the future. A huge white space that I see forming has to do with largely IoTs, AI, and especially I'm talking about generative AI, differential diagnostics. Also in the role of, let's say, customized products for chronic care patients. So, like, for example, rainy boots for people with diabetes. Because people with diabetes scathe easy and they don't get to heal quickly. So, preemptive interventions in these areas will be impactful.
Very thoughtful. So most of the things that you've mentioned here, the opportunities that designers have, either from a job perspective, more from a, let's say, from an entrepreneurial perspective as well, because there are a lot of problems that can be solved. And correct me if I'm wrong here. So the latest things that we've seen in the fitness, evolution of fitness, is quite interesting to see where people have now come up with, let's say, a ring that can track
Yes, that can track your sleep.
glucose
Yes, sleep.
levels, right? Metabolic fitness.
Correct.
So is it right to say that all these things are pointing in that direction, at least somehow?
Yes. I think the IoTs are going to be a big thing, right? Because, I mean, your doctor cannot monitor your glucose day in and day out, but the ring can. So maybe, again, transfer of duties. It's easier for the ring to monitor it and the doctor to look at it once to decipher a pattern, right? But yes, that is the white space that I was talking about. This is one, but I believe there is a potential for, let's say, your watch to detect depression. So I'm not just talking about, let's say, apples to apples. I'm also talking about apples to oranges, where we can derive certain data as well as extrapolate them to be able to make certain predictive inferences.
Interesting. So all of these are systemic changes that, I mean, majority of them that we've discussed today are at a very system level. And yeah, sounds like the future is exciting and the space is very interesting to, keep an eye out for this.
It is a fertile space. It's because we are literally trailblazing. We are the first generation of people who are talking about UX in healthcare, right? And I don't mean you and me, I mean we as a generation. And I feel like these conversations, like my friend used to say, baat karne se hi baat banti hai. So these conversations are all pointing and moving in that direction. And genuinely, healthcare is the need of the day and the need for a better future, right? We messed up with climate change. I think this is our time to set it right. At least not climate change, something else, right?
Of course. Of course, of course. So now, so we've talked about opportunities and everything. Now, anything else that you'd like to mention about, let's say, in future, the importance of UX? Although you've already talked about how important it is going to be, any last words in that area that you would like to add?
I think I would just summarize it at this stage and talk about, let's say, first aspect of, let's say, the upcoming need of designers in healthcare would be around digitization, right? Which is about moving the healthcare ecosystem online. The second would be solutioning for chronic health conditions, comorbidities, and complex clinical case studies. Internal process and system optimization would be the third one. Human-centric approach, so bringing the voice of the customer to the table, listening to them, catering to their needs, and adding a certain level of heart to your healthcare interventions. Lastly, I couldn't exaggerate this more, but the solutioning around affordability and accessibility, I would say these would be the key future intervention points for our upcoming designers within healthcare.
Very well summarized. So we've talked about importance and quite a lot of things. Now I want to ask you, what do you look at, in an individual, in an application, in a portfolio? What is it that you look at when you're hiring a designer?
Yeah, this is a tricky one, right?
Guys,
This
you need to pay attention here and reach out to Varuna later with your portfolios.
like please do reach out to me, but I have to say, unfortunately, this is not a simple answer. And it will change company to company, role to role, and work environment wise as well, right? I think the key thing here, I'm going to be a little old fashioned and talk about how the craft of being a designer is very important. Ideas are not going to solve itself. It is important to translate them into minimalistic, well-designed, well-oriented flows, screens, assets. And I feel like that is one very important component to me. And I see that nowadays the craft is certainly a huge missing link. So I would advise at least most young and upcoming designers to pay attention to that.
So what do you mean when you say craft?
Your contrast, your spacing, your alignment, the basics that go into design and sophisticated design, if I could say so. Problem solutioning thinking, and this is where I think it is the ability to think outside of screens. Because your screens do not solve the problems. Your screens are, you solve for life and use screens as enablers for the solution.
That's very well said.
Right?
Yeah, that's very well said.
And this is a mistake that a lot of young designers today make. They try to solve everything within the screen. So I would think that is a very interesting skill for me to look for. Apart from that, I think as a hygiene, curiosity, collaboration, cross-functional communication. I think another key factor that I personally find very interesting has to do with interest in creating impact.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Okay. And there is a large level of this in most youngsters these days because, like, I feel like we are moving into a more self-aware generation. But I think the key here is to find the people who will, because things will get hard. to find the people who are in it for the bigger picture. I find that quite interesting. I think lastly, I would end by saying being able to adapt is a very underrated UX design skill.
Right.
You know, to facilitate, drive, you know, alignment,
yeah.
conceptualizing ideas, but also being malleable enough to adapt to the needs of the audience, the stakeholders. I think it's a very underrated skill, and having that will certainly be one extra brownie point in your kitty.
That's amazing. Wow. I think each and everything could be potentially turned into a project here, whatever that you've mentioned here. Yeah. So guys, you sort of have the blueprint to make it to Dr. Reddy's as a designer, right?
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Thank you so much, Varuna, for joining me today. And I love this conversation. First time I'm talking about UX in healthcare, and you've broken it down very well. Things that I didn't know, I've learned today, and I'm sure people and listeners would definitely find a lot of value in this.
Thank you so much. But I think this kind of, I have to say something here, Sanjay. I think one of the key things, key advice points for any of my budding designers is to talk to your peers and talk to people. Because just as much as a rookie can learn from an expert from can learn from a rookie.
Yeah.
And I mean, totally otherwise, I think one of my most enlightening design conversations have been with you.
Oh, wow.
I mean, especially the parts where we talk about how you talk about the whole transportation design and the HMI factors that, you know, let's say the perspective that a transportation designer brings in, right? And those are like new points that make me curious and make me want to explore them within my field. So, I mean, I think it's underrated. It is something that people should do.
Wow. Thank you. That's humbling to know. All right. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And thank you for having me here. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
It's a pleasure.